Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps. And thanks.
By surface area, the Great Lakes comprise the largest body of fresh water in the world. But for the past few years, a green toxic algae has been blooming in one of the Great Lakes, Lake Erie, and this past summer, the green glop has been growing out of control, threatening wildlife, swimmers, and drinking water supplies. As Julie Grant reports from Ohio, scientists now say it's just one of a number of toxic algae threatening the lake.
It's a windy day along the Lake Erie shoreline in western Ohio. Captain Paul Pacholsky doesn't want to battle the big waves, so he meets me inside the Lake Erie Research Center, which overlooks the water. Pacholsky started a charter boat business with his father in the early 1980s. This has been one of their toughest years because the lake is filled with algae.
Algae was actually probably the worst I have seen it in the 27 years I've been doing this. It started developing probably in the middle of June, where you normally don't see it till July, and by August it was horrendous.
Pacholsky says the pea-green fluorescent slime made it look like his boat was moving through paint. His customers would ask, "What's up with the water?" He tried to brush the algae off as no big deal, but he wouldn't take them to his regular fishing spots. It was embarrassing.
You would not want to stop and take customers from another state, such as Wisconsin or Illinois, and stop them in that water and have them look at that green broth and just know that our lake's starting to get sick.
Pacholsky says the algae cost him and other charter boat captains more than 10% of their business this year, and he's worried about the future of fishing here. The shallow water makes the Western Basin the best nursery grounds in Lake Erie for walleye, perch, and whitefish. These fish are the backbone of the lake's billion-dollar fishing industry. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources says the number of walleye have dropped from 80 million down to 20 million over the past 5 years. Officials and some scientists suspect it's due to the algae. Tom Bridgman stands on the western Lake Erie shore. He's an environmental studies professor at the University of Toledo and has studied Microcystis and Lingbia algae since 2003.
See this dark green, blackish, stringy-looking algae, and then you see a bright green, almost fluorescent green scum of algae, and those are the two different kinds.
These toxic algae have encroached on Lake Erie for 7 years now, but this year it hit where people noticed, along the shorelines in the tourist areas. Beaches were under swimming advisories most of the summer. Bridgman says most types of algae are good for the food chain in a lake, but this recent algae can be dangerous to people.
The problem with it is that it produces a toxin, and that toxin can damage the liver if it's ingested and can cause skin rashes in some people.
We stand on a 4-foot-high pile of dried algae that runs along the beach. Bridgman says this variety is called Lingbia, and it forms what looks like a thick mat of hair along the bottom of the lake. Lingbia consumes oxygen and could cause hypoxia, suffocating fish and other organisms on the bottom of the lake. In the past few years, Lingbia has piled on the shorelines as the weather cools in the fall.
And when the conditions are right and the algae breaks loose from the bottom, there'll be another layer of algae deposited right where we're standing.
The algae feed on excess nutrients in the water, especially phosphorus from agriculture and sewage. Bridgman remembers when Lake Erie was known as a dirty, dead lake in the 1970s. But in the wake of the Clean Water Act, water quality improved. Industrial pollution was largely cut off, and fish populations rebounded. There was a renaissance in tourism and fishing in the 80s and early 90s. But in the mid-1990s, algae blooms started appearing. The EPA focused on sewer systems. In many cities, such as Toledo and Detroit, the sewers can't handle big rain events, so they wind up dumping tons of raw sewage into Lake Erie. In recent years, the government has forced cities to improve their sewers. George Robinson is in charge of renovating Toledo's sewer system. The 15 to 20-year project has a $500 million price tag, and he says it's already preventing overflows at the city's water treatment plant.
And fortunately, we have had at least 3 years where everything that goes in gets treated before it's released. No bypasses whatsoever.
But even as Toledo and other cities have reduced the amount of raw waste dumped into Lake Erie, the toxic algae problem has grown worse. A study released this year by the Ohio Lake Erie Phosphorus Task Force largely blames farms.
There's a number of agricultural procedures that we think have changed over the last 20 years or so.
University of Toledo's Tom Bridgman is a member of the task force. He says farmers today apply manure and fertilizers in the fall and winter instead of just the spring. And that means more phosphorus ends up in the waterways, especially now with climate change.
You know, when the ground is frozen, that tends to lock in the nutrients. But now we get big rainstorms in January, and so a lot of fertilizer that's applied can just wash off then.
Water from 6 million acres in Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan drains into western Lake Erie. So even if each farm loses a small amount of phosphorus, it can still add up to a lot in rivers and in the lake. Bridgman says there are efforts to work with farmers to reduce runoff of fertilizers and manure. Captain Paul Pacholski hopes they can make a difference. As it is now, he says this could be the end of the line for the fishing business he started with his father and a way of life.
I would not feel safe letting my dog go in that water or my grandson. And that's a sorry state of events from water that we've all grown up with.
For Living on Earth, I'm Julie Grant in Western Ohio.
Just ahead, Don't Be Such a Scientist. A new book teaches researchers how to communicate with the public.
The science community is continuing to communicate today largely at the same pace that they did 20 or 30 years ago, while our society has turned into this rapid action society of people tweeting and Twittering and YouTubing and everything else like that, and the profession is not keeping up with it.
Turning scientists into storytellers. Keep listening to Living on Earth.